south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, here's an email for you. Dear Johnny, I took your advice, I think it was in a show of about maybe a year and a half ago, where you said a good way to see Central America is to take a private bus called the Tica bus. Now, I found out by going on the internet that the Tica bus is a line of so-called upscale buses that goes from Panama City, Panama, all the way through Central America, winding through practically all the countries until it gets to Mexico and on till Mexico City, what they call there the Federal District or Distrito Federal. Anyway, looking online at the Tica bus route, I found they are quite like Greyhound buses, and they have movies and potties and all that. Of course, always slightly Latin-style, meaning they're short on the details, but it's better, much better, 1,000% better than riding a chicken bus. I know, I've tried both. And the cost? Well, it's probably a quarter the cost of a Greyhound bus, if there were such things down here. And by the way, I did see a Greyhound bus while on the road in the Tica bus going through Nicaragua. In fact, it really was a Greyhound bus, obviously a beat-up, broken-down old one, tilted actually like it had been hit broadside and never repaired. And believe it or not, you know in the back where they've got two sets of giant tandem wheels, the outside wheel on the last tandem was actually missing. I mean, no wheel at all. So the inside wheel was taking the full load. And yes, as usual, it was full up with people. But it was just too dirty and dented to actually be a real Greyhound line. Plus, when I was checking out the Tica bus lines and others, by the way, there's another called Pullman line, which is similar to the Tica bus line, only a little more expensive. Anyway, there is no Greyhound line in Latin America, but as mentioned, I saw one. Should have got a picture, huh? I guess, on further thought, Latin America is where old Greyhound buses go to die, or perhaps get painted and converted into chicken buses. Who knows? But I digress, like you do, Johnny. Anyway, I booked tickets on that Tica bus, and I decided to start at the bottom end. That would be Panama City, actually Colon, Panama, which is about 45-minute ride from Panama City. And I decided to start from the bottom up, you know, Panama, north, on through to Mexico, which I know seems ass backwards, especially since I live in Houston. So why did I do things in reverse? Because I noticed on the internet when they have those tremendous last-minute deals, there was a quick flight down to Panama City from Houston for, get this, around $360. What a deal, huh? Of course, I only had about a day's notice, so I had to scramble. Anyway, I really have to admit, if you really want to see both on and off the Gringo Tourist Trail, just take one of those Tica bus rides all the way up through Central America. By the way, I'm one of those persons who's never been south of Mexico. I do things backpacker style, at least I have done. As a lot of college kids do, I went through Europe on a backpacker's trip some years ago, but that was then. I'm older now, in my mid-30s, and don't feel like roughing it that much. I'm always looking for a little bit better accommodations than sharing a bathroom, which I know you say, Johnny, is your own personal minimum standard. Having your own bathroom. I totally concur with that. No matter how much dough you think you're going to save by sharing a bathroom, just one bout of Montezuma's revenge and you'll change your mind. Whether it's you or your roommates who are the victims, it doesn't matter. Everyone suffers. But as for this Tica bus trip, they have their own affiliated hotels very nearby. For example, when we pulled into Managua, Nicaragua at 5:30, close to dark, right across the street, in fact, somewhat in the parking lot itself of the Tica bus terminal, they had their own designated hotel. Backpacker style, to be sure, sharing bathrooms and stuff, but totally guarded and gated, and you know they're going to wake you up in the morning for that next run on through to El Salvador. However, if you don't want to stay at one of their so-called designated hotels, you can book a better one. They've got some selections. But I'll tell you, in most of the neighborhoods where they have their terminals, places where you stop for the night, they can be quite middle class, even sort of run down. Kind of ratty looking. In other words, you don't want to walk around at night, not more than a couple blocks from the terminal. But like I said, the Tica bus is way above a chicken bus and pretty cheap. For example, you could go from El Salvador, for example, to Guatemala City, I think for around $30. In fact, you probably could make the entire trip from Panama all the way up to Mexico for around 140 or 50 bucks. But note, it takes 3 or 4 stops for the night, and you could stay at their cheap hotel and share a bath, or you can get a more upscale one, also very close by, where you have your own bathroom. Which, by the way, almost no one on my Tika bus opted for except yours truly, the gringo. As for the other passengers, everyone except the few gringos that are on the bus speak nothing but Spanish. They're locals. Meaning, chances are, unless you hook up with another backpacking gringo, you won't be speaking any English to anyone. So anyway, you could make it from Panama City all the way to Mexico with 3 night stops. Or you can do what I did, and I think a lot of gringos would just love to do, is you stop off in each big city to hang a while and explore. That means you can get off in Colón, Panama City, Managua, San Salvador, Guatemala City, along with a few more stops along the way. So, for example, what you can do, as in my case, when the bus landed in San Jose, Costa Rica from Panama, that was the first stop where Tika Bus had their own terminal. So I got off there and ended up exploring Costa Rica for a couple weeks. I did the Costa Rica beach thing, and like you said, Johnny, hanging with partying gringos gets old pretty fast. So anyway, on the next stop from San Jose, Costa Rica to Managua, Nicaragua, I pulled a self-imposed layover there too and stayed about 3 weeks, hitting a desolate spot called Corn Island, then the rather touristy town of Granada, which, as you know, is a beautiful colonial town with an old Spanish section. Then, of course, to the Pacific beach town of San Juan del Sur, which is now popular with low-budget gringo tourists, too. Those little excursions I took on, believe it or not, the local chicken buses, which I know you don't recommend, but knowing the risks and being a backpacker at heart, I can never resist a ride that's under a buck. So anyway, after a couple of weeks in Nicaragua, I was back on the Tika bus, taking it Managua to El Salvador, landing in the capital, San Salvador, and since the country of El Salvador is so small, I just ended up staying there about a week and a half, hitting the Pacific beach town of La Libertad and up and down the coast, then taking, as you recommended in one of your shows, the Ruta del Flores, the flower route in the mountains. That was spectacularly beautiful. A lot of cool off-the-tourist trail places to stay, like, for example, coffee plantations with their own cheap bed and breakfasts and such. Yep, with flowers practically everywhere. That's why they call it the flower route. I even booked 2 nights in the famous Latin all-inclusive Decameron. Caught a deal there, too, in the local papers. It was $59 a night. They call it the Decameron Sultanitas or something like that. Had a really great time there. Stuffed myself because, you know, it's all-inclusive. And when I left, I did the typical backpacker thing and stuffed my backpack with free food, too, which lasted a good 2 days on the road. Can't shake those old cheap-ass habits, I guess. So back to San Salvador to catch the Tika bus again. From there, it landed in Guatemala City. The point being, I have to recommend seeing Central America that way. Taking something like the Pullman or the Tika bus, spreading the trip out, stopping at the big cities along the way, and then taking a week or 2 or 3 off at each country to see the sights. Explore on your own, you know, boots on the ground and all that. So you can turn a 3 or 4 day trip from Panama to Mexico, or reverse, Mexico to Panama, into a 2 or 3 month long trip and get a really great and extensive view of Central America, both on and off the gringo tourist trail. And you're right, Johnny, I vastly prefer off the gringo tourist trail now that I've seen both. With Panama and Costa Rica, I was definitely in the center of all gringodom. No pun intended, but a lot of gringos are really dumb. Whereas once I hit Managua, San Salvador and Guatemala City, well, then I got to experience things way off the gringo tourist trail. So if you take your time like that, you get to experience the beach towns, the lower elevation farm areas, and that beautiful altiplano you're always talking about. Now, that's the place to live. Everything you said is spot on. You can't believe it. It's eternal spring weather. When by all rights, it should be 100 or 110 degrees, it's sitting smack dab at 78. With no humidity either, except, of course, if it's raining. Yeah, I know, it's one of those things you have to see to believe, but doing it my way, with that Tika bus, you get a good taste of everything. And there's another advantage to taking the Pullman or the Tika bus. You get to practice a lot of your bad Spanish, because unless there's a gringo or two on the bus, you'll have to make do. Of course, everyone will try to speak English to you. You know, they'll give you their best 10 or 20 words. Oh, and speaking of English, you're right again, Johnny. I'd say about 90% of the Latins on that bus had t-shirts and sweatshirts and sweaters with English sayings and logos on them. It's all a fad down here. It's even more than a fad. It's an obsession. Even though most of these people, like you said, don't know what the English letters on their t-shirts mean. Even if to us the saying is dirty or embarrassing, they're pleased as punch to be wearing something with some kind of English lettering on it. Oh, and I forgot to mention, about every 2 to 3 hours on the road, the bus will stop for a tea and refreshment break. I mean, pee and refreshment break. And you know, it looks to me that it's kind of rigged. We suddenly stop at a typical truck stop Latin-style restaurant, somewhat out in the boonies. There's nothing wrong with it. It's very, very cheap and basic. But it seems like the driver's getting a kickback because everyone's got to pee and everyone's got to eat. So we stop at a totally empty restaurant and suddenly it's filled with the Tika Bus people. An instant cha-ching for the owner, huh? You soon get the feeling it's the driver's brother-in-law that owns the restaurant. I'd do it too. I mean, look, you got 40 or 50 hungry people with near-exploding bladders. Why not let your brother-in-law cash in? Oh, and by the way, about every hour to an hour and a half, the bus will stop for maybe 5 minutes, and a couple of ladies and kids will get on to try to sell you nuts and cakes and pastries and stuff. And I guess that must be an inside deal too, because normally there'll be about 10 or 15 people mulling around outside the bus to try to sell you stuff too, but only a select few are allowed to get in and walk the aisles. So why, when the bus stops, are only a select few allowed in? Obviously, there must be a payoff for the driver, or maybe it's friends and family. Probably. Oh, and once in a while, just as the driver is pulling out of a larger city and almost into the boonies, oddly enough, he'll stop right out in the middle of nowhere to pick up a person that's standing on the side of the road. Could be a single lady or a lady with a kid. Maybe a guy carrying a box or a sack or two. And you know, these guys are not selling anything, nor are they paying customers, because sooner or later, the bus stops and the person or persons get off. Again, surely another kind of special arrangement the bus driver has with these people. Anyway, Johnny, I just thought I'd add my 2 cents there, and thanks for putting up with such a long letter. Though I have one last comment. On my 10-week excursion through Central America, I stopped at a lot of out-of-the-way places where you wouldn't expect to find a lot of gringos at all. Gringos were scarce, but once in a while I'd run into a gringo, what you might call a gringo gone native, like you mentioned in a previous show. Almost always it's a guy, very often with long gray hair and a ponytail, scruffy and definitely in need of a bath, sometimes with a faded zigzag man tattoo or even a military tattoo. The clothes always rumpled, sometimes with an indigenous pair of pants or shirt, you know, that multicolored stuff local indigenous people wear. Then there's the cheap local necklaces and bracelets, right out of the 60s hippie posters. Anyway, what I've learned about these guys is you don't want to ask them too many questions. You have to wonder, who are these guys, where'd they come from, and why they still look like that? I have to think they left the States a long, long time ago, perhaps as draft dodgers. Not from the Gulf War, but from Vietnam. And you know, one thing I've learned is you don't want to ask them too many questions. I probably met a half a dozen of these guys along the way, and they're not like your typical touring gringo, even backpacking gringos, who are always rather friendly, and when they meet another gringo, they've got a million stories to tell. You know, where'd you come from? What are you doing here? Where are you staying? Who sells the cheapest beer? Now, that's a big topic amongst backpackers. Anyway, whereas these gray-haired, scruffy hippie types, they don't seem to take kindly to too many questions. Which reminds me of a show or two you did quite a long time ago, talking about a certain percentage of gringos that are totally off the radar. They're escaping something up in the States, and these guys, it seems, escaped Woodstock, or perhaps they're draft dodgers from a long-ago war. But you don't want to ask them questions like that. That's when they turn into grumpy old men. But here's the thing, Johnny. I've got an uncle who was a draft dodger, and he went to Canada. A Vietnam thing, and he stayed up in Canada for, I think, it was 10 or so years. And then later, either Reagan or Jimmy Carter gave him amnesty. After that, draft dodgers could come home with their records wiped clean. Remember that? Well, maybe you don't. But that's what happened to my uncle, so I wonder if these gone native types I've met on occasion, especially in places like Grenada, Nicaragua, Antigua, Guatemala, Panachel, Tegucigalpa, Copan, and La Ceiba, Honduras, are these guys so off the radar, so out of touch that they haven't heard that there's been amnesty for Vietnam draft dodgers? Anyway, Johnny, I just wanted to give you a report on what I think is a very good way to see Central America, at least, by taking a Pullman or a Tika bus and doing it town by town. Now, knowing that I'm kind of a reformed backpacker type, I've estimated my daily cost on that 10-week trip, including the Tikka bus and my most expensive 3 days at the Decameron. I estimate I was doing Central America for around $35 a day, including hotels, food, everything. And nearly all the time I had a hotel with my own private bath. Oh, and note, unlike up in the first world, most hotels down here in Latin America give you a free breakfast. And of course, being a somewhat reformed backpacker, I can't resist, when no one's looking of course, stuffing a sandwich or some baked goods in my backpack as snacks for the rest of the day. Come on, we've all done that, right? Oh, and one last thing, Johnny. On your advice, I bought one of those Adalock security devices to use in hotel rooms when you're traveling. The one that hooks into your inside door latch and knob, assuring that no one, even with a pass key, can enter at any time. Let me tell you, Johnny, that was the best $15 I ever spent. Because, you know, since I was paying maybe $15 to $20 a night for a hotel room, I wasn't staying at the Ritz. And in those 10 weeks on the road in Central America, I remember two distinct times late at night in my hotel room where I heard someone testing my door. And without that little Adalock device, I probably would have gotten robbed. Who knows? Anyway, Johnny, like I said, I traveled alone, but I did have a secret companion. I had your last 300 Expat Files shows loaded into my iPod. Thanks a million for what you do, Johnny. Signed, Alan S. Well, Alan, thanks for that. And I have to say, that was the longest email I ever read. But I guess that it was worth it, because you mentioned the Tikka bus. I've actually done that same full trip about four different times. That's Panama to Mexico, Mexico down to Panama again. And over the years, I've done a couple of short stops in between. You're so right. There's no better way to see Central America on the cheap than to jump on one of those so-called Latin-style Greyhound buses. That would be Pullman Tour, Tikka Bus, and there's one called King Travel, K-I-N-G, and there's a few more. Just picture U.S. Greyhound bus travel in the States, only a slightly bit dingier at about a third of the price. And like Ellen says, it's light years away from taking a chicken bus and 100% secure. In fact, in all the years I've been down here, I've never read in the paper or seen on the internet where one of those private bus lines got pulled over, robbed, or hijacked. Oh, and another thing I like about taking those bus lines that go from country to country, when they pull over at a land border, let's say from Costa Rica to Nicaragua, sure, you can get out, stretch your legs, change money, maybe go to a cafeteria or take a pee break. But remember, land borders in Latin America are dirty, scruffy, hot, not necessarily dangerous, but not very pleasant either. A lot of dirtball scumbag characters hanging around. They're not going to rob you, but they're going to try to at least rip you off on the money exchange bit, so don't get stung there. But if you take one of those private bus lines, when you hit a land border between two countries, often the driver will stand up and say, "Who doesn't want to go in? Give me your passport," and you'll give it to the driver. And he'll take that stack to the immigration counter and get them all stamped without you ever having to get off the bus. Believe me, that saves a lot of time and BS. Now, of course, that won't happen at every border. I believe last time I went through the Mexican-Guatemala border, everybody had to get out. In the other borders of the smaller countries, it's a breeze when you go on one of those buses. Okay, so what about that other thing Ellen was talking about? Meeting those so-called gringos occasionally who have gone native. Well, as you might imagine, in my 25-plus years down here, I've run into quite a few of these guys. Dozens, maybe hundreds. And Ellen's right. You don't want to ask these guys too many questions. Guys like that who've been down here so many years, way off the radar, keeping a very low profile, they learned a long time ago not to open up to strangers. Most of them, in fact, seem a bit paranoid. The only way you're ever going to get into an honest conversation with one of these guys is if, one, you're in a very laid-back bar or restaurant and you're buying the drinks. Or, two, your good Spanish means you've been down a long time and just might be a kindred spirit. That is, you're trying to get away from Big Brother, stay off the radar, and sort of fade away. That said, just a couple weeks ago, I was in Antigua, Guatemala with my Expat Wisdom Seminar people, and it was about 7 o'clock at night, the sun was down, I was sitting in a tiny little cafe outside the Central Park. The guy on the stool across from me had long gray hair, a couple of faded tattoos, Jesus sandals, thick, yellow, beat-up toenails, and his fingernails just as ragged and crude and about an inch long. Yep, you gotta know chicks dig that. Diagnosis? Typical hippie era, long-term expat gone native. So I'm sitting nearby with a couple of local Latins and we're speaking very good Spanish. The gringo with the fingernail obsession is about 4 feet away and we're both looking straight out to the Central Park. Meanwhile, directly in our view towards the Central Park is a table full of upscale gringos, wearing fashionable, expensive L.L. Bean safari clothes. One guy I could see had a $150 leather Indiana Jones hat. Yep, when you're off the Gringo Tourist Trail, especially where there are archaeologic ruins, you'll see the occasional gringo eco-tourists in expensive brand-name Outback clothing. Anyway, as usual, in any place where there are gringos, there'll be local natives, kids, and mothers trying to sell indigenous stuff table to table. And that long-haired gringo and I noticed something going on at that table where Indiana Jones was holding court. There were three little indigenous kids, two boys and a girl, 7 to maybe 10 years old, trying to sell some trinkets. Now, when the kids tried to sell them something, they didn't buy anything. Instead, they just gave each one of them a couple of low-denomination funny money notes. They're called quetzales in Guatemala. They didn't want the trinkets. They just gave them the money for nothing. Now, at that point, the scruffy gringo sitting on his stool about 4 feet away from me, he looked at me and squinted and said in perfect Spanish, "You see that?" Then he shook his head in disapproval. That's how a perfectly good paradise gets f***ed up by gringos. And you know what? He didn't have to say another thing. I knew exactly what he meant. You get it, right? He's saying, you never give the locals free money like that. Always take their wares. If you want to support them, buy what they have to sell, but never ever give them free money, because after a while it taints them, makes them jaded. Then they start expecting free things from other gringos they run into. Why should they make and sell anything when stupid gringos will give them free money for just standing around looking cute? In fact, I can't tell you how many times I heard an American lady tourist say, "Oh, Harvey, isn't he cute? Give him a buck. Let's take a picture and put it on Facebook." Yep, that's how it starts. And why, in a lot of small towns where there were no beggars before, suddenly, when gringos start arriving, little by little, the something-for-nothing crowd multiplies too. Who do they hit on? Not locals. They won't fall for it. Why, stupid gringos, of course, especially new arrivals with rose-colored glasses. They see the barefoot, runny-nosed kids and they want to help them. Now, I know what you're thinking. Gringos come down on vacation with a lot of dough, a lot more than the locals will ever make, that's for sure. Their hearts go out to the kids especially. So you're thinking these kids got to eat and you'll give them some free dough, right? Not realizing the kids will just run out and buy some junk food and a Coke. But beyond that, did you ever think, where are the parents? These kids are 7, 8, 9, 10, and 12 years old, and there are no parents around. But believe me, they're around all right. And they're splitting or even taking all the dough those little kids are making off of gringos. Unless the kids are actually selling a souvenir or a knickknack, it's a racket. And if you don't believe that, how come it doesn't exist way off the gringo tourist trail? Why does it always seem to sprout up as soon as the gringos arrive? Like that aging hippie Jerry Garcia clone said, "Newly arrived gringos are soft in the heart and soft in the head." Okay, let's move on. I got a question the other day from a brand new expat gringo lady who came to one of my expat wisdom seminars and now she's just about to take the plunge and live permanently down here in Latin America. She said, "Johnny, I'm really looking forward to shopping at one of those big central markets. I remember you took us to one at the seminar and I just couldn't believe the amounts, the variety, the size, and how unprocessed, natural, and unbelievably inexpensive all that produce was." She said, "Johnny, what I really need is some tips on how to shop there. You showed me it's nothing to be afraid of, but I have to start somewhere." Okay, for starters, here's what I suggest. If you're going to take a vehicle down, you have to find a nice, safe parking place, and there's always a few around the periphery. The cost? About $1 an hour. They're guarded and gated and all that, and they're perfectly secure. Don't park on the street. Not that your car's going to get stolen or broken into. It surely won't. But there are so many people and vendors passing by with their wheelbarrows and metal hand trucks that you're bound to get a couple of dings and scratches if you leave it on the street, so don't do it. Now, note, you'll generally be doing a lot of walking and you'll be carrying a lot of big whole food items. So have an umbrella and wear beat-up shoes. You might have to step in some pretty disgusting puddles. Now, what you buy and carry is going to get pretty heavy. And luckily, a little side business has grown up in all these big markets, You'll find there are guys standing around whose only job is to carry things for you. So, by all means, hire one. I do. These guys are cargadores, carriers. In fact, when they spot a gringo, they'll come right up to you and say, "Carga, señor?" And from that moment on, you won't have to carry anything. You can walk through that market for an hour or two, or 10 minutes. You can trek high and low, go to the meat area, the fish area, the citrus area, the herbal area, the hardware area, and this guy will follow you, carry your bags, and in fact, when they get really heavy, he'll wrap a strap around his forehead, carry one heavy bag on his back with the strap on his head, and up to 2 bags on each arm. Now, sure, the guy is straining. He might be carrying 50, even 100 pounds, but he'll show no sign of weakness and stay the course. Even if, to keep up with you, he has to weave through the crowd like Groucho Marx with a double hernia. And, of course, he'll walk right back to your car with you. And what do you pay him? Well, he'll always say, "Pay me what you think's fair." And from what I've noticed, when you're off the gringo tourist trail anyway, a very fair price is about 50 U.S. cents, which they'll be quite happy with. Oh, and by the way, here's another sneaky trick I've noticed. When one of those guys hooks up with a gringo like you or me, believe it or not, the gringo advantage kicks in, and it's kind of a status symbol for him to be carrying for a gringo. And that gives him some liberties. For example, when you and he are passing by fruit stands, checking out the strawberries, pears, apples, or tangerines, all the while, your carrier guy will be munching away, right off the carts of the vendors. Surprisingly, they won't get pissed off or shoo the guy away either. The guy's with a gringo. Now, a carrier won't pull that trick if he's hauling for a Latin person. So, just being with a gringo has its privileges. Now, this is the kind of stuff you have to see to believe. In fact, the first time I noticed my carrier had snuck a mango from a guy's wheelbarrow, I had a sudden flash that the seller was going to ream him out, but he didn't. He just looked at me, looked back at my carrier who was munching away, and let it slide. Not a problem. By the way, when I said 50 cents in their funny money, of course, is good pay, I've seen fresh gringos who don't know the ropes go to the market and tip these guys $5, which is more or less a half a day's work for the average person down here. So, word gets around fast, and it's no wonder that the next time a gringo shows up in the market, and believe me, they don't show up often, it's like bees to honey for every bag carrier in the area, which I guess brings us back full circle to that long-haired hippie gringo gone native when he made that soft heart, soft head comment about newly arrived gringos.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture. He knows.